Chapter 9, The Sabbath Healing Near the Pool of Siloam, Ensuing Controversy. Verse 1. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? It was common for disciples of Jewish rabbis to ask their trusted teachers questions that would attempt to make sense of things and reconcile the biblical teachings they knew with the reality they saw around them. The disciples of Jesus were faced with a question that had to do with the nature of human suffering in general, as illustrated by the suffering of the blind man in particular. They gave Jesus two opinions. Was it the blind man himself, or was it his parents who were to blame? Verse 3. It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered, but so the power of God should be seen in him. Jesus answered their question with a simple reply, neither. The reason for the man's blindness was not rooted in sin at all. This would have been the normal explanation. Jesus' point was that somehow, through the suffering of the blind man, a greater good, in this case, the glory of God, would be in the end manifested. Like the drama in the book of Job, only those who are removed from the events by space and time are able to appreciate what was really going on. In the previous story of the healing of the man who had been a cripple for 38 years, we saw the evil shepherds of Israel being confronted by the Son of Man who steadily moves up with his miracles and signs, first from Galilee to Judea's pagan Asclepion, and now to the facility actually associated with the Jerusalem temple, performing one of the greatest miracles in the Bible, giving sight to a man who had never seen before. He was born blind. This kind of healing was absolutely without a precedent. Verse 4. I must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming, and then no one can work. But while I am here in the world, I am the light of the world. It seems that the man's blindness from birth symbolized the disparity and deeply flawed condition of herding sheep, the people of Israel. Therefore, giving light to the eyes of the blind man was a prophetic sign of giving light to all Israel. Both the healing and the ultimate redemptive works of Jesus needed to be carried out quickly to ease the burden of God's people who were suffering oppression from all sides. The urgency of Jesus' task is set within the immediate context of the ancient world, when work could only be done during the day. Christ, anticipating his agony on the cross, characterizes this as the time of darkness. Mark 15:33 describes this yet future event as follows. When the sixth hour came, darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour. What is interesting here, and perhaps counterintuitive for us, is that it is not the death of Jesus, but only the suffering on the cross that is described in terms of night and darkness. Verse 6. Then he spit on the ground, made mud with his saliva, and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. Most people find this verse strange and have trouble connecting the sanitized Western Jesus of our imaginations with what appears to be an act worthy of a Middle Eastern shaman. We're simply stunned to hear that Jesus spit on the ground, made mud with the saliva, and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. There should not be anything stunning about this. Prophets were known to not only speak with words, but also through symbolic actions. Ezekiel was especially renowned for this. His prophetic actions include eating a scroll, binding himself with cords, making brick models and enacting a siege, and shaving his head, among others. This is exactly what Jesus is doing here. He is about to heal the man who was born blind, and he wanted the people present connected with God's creation of man. God created man from the dust of the ground, and the act of healing by Jesus was a redemptive act of restoration performed by the Logos of God Himself. Jesus' healing of this blind man is of paramount significance. It is not just a healing, it is the creation of a new man. Everything that Jesus does in John shows him to be God. It displays what in theological language we call high Christology, which means that it presents Christ as fully divine versus almost divine or somewhat divine. This is indeed a clear presentation. Jesus drew the parallel between himself and God, not only through the miracle itself, but also through the prophetic symbolic use of mud or dust of the ground. Verse 7. He told him, "Go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam." Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back, seeing. It is interesting that when Jesus healed the man at the pool of Bethesda, he did not tell him to be washed there. This is most likely because the pool of Bethesda was a pagan facility, Asclepion, while the pool of Siloam was a Jewish facility affiliated with the Jerusalem temple, the center of worship for the Judaioi. Verse 8. His neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, "Is this the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said he was, and others said, "No, he just looks like him." But the beggar kept saying, "Yes, I am the same one." They asked, "Who healed you? What happened?" He told them, "The man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself.' So I went and washed, and now I can see." "Where is he now?" they asked. "I don't know," he replied. Then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees, because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him. The Pharisees asked the man all about it, so he told them, "He put the mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man Jesus is not from God, for he is working on the Sabbath." Others said, "But how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous things?" So there was a deep division of opinion among them. Pharisees were the favorites of urban Jewish dwellers. It is probable that the reason the people went to the Pharisees was that the Pharisaic movement was a grassroots religious movement, and it was less connected to the temple establishment than were the Sadducees. By the time of Jesus, the role of the priests, who were mainly Sadducees, was in many ways taken over by the much more popular and progressive Pharisaic movement. Jewish people loved to disagree with one another, and this time was no exception. Some of the Pharisees thought Jesus' mud-making activity was Sabbath-breaking, while others, also Pharisees, did not agree, citing this as a proof of Jesus' innocence and the fact that God had granted him supernatural abilities, therefore approving his ministry. Verse 17. Then the Pharisees again questioned the man who had been blind and demanded, "What is your opinion about this man who healed you?" The man replied, "I think he must be a prophet." Given the fact that not all Pharisees were against Jesus on this matter, we should not assume the investigation into the man's healing only yielded negative impressions. It is possible that the two parties within the Pharisaic camp were debating with each other and in this case came to very different views regarding the person of Jesus. Was he a sinner or was he a saint? It was now up to the formerly blind man to report what he thought about the man who had healed him. But it was not simple. The side that did not approve of Jesus was far more powerful than the group among the Pharisees who loved him. Therefore, the predominant reaction and subsequent questioning of the man who had been blind was overwhelmingly negative. Keep in mind that the Pharisees were part of the Judaioi. They were a subgroup. Verse 18. The Judaioi still refused to believe the man had been blind and could not see, so they called in his parents. Those who rejected Jesus and his divine calling had to also reject his miracles, because the argument accepted by all was that Israel's God would not endow someone whom he did not approve with miracle-working power. The important thing here was not the healing itself. It was not even the fact of opening the eyes of the blind man. The issue was something far more powerful. It was bringing sight to a man who had been blind from birth. The authorities refused to believe that the man, in fact, had been blind from birth. They called in witnesses who would validate their growing suspicion that this was either a hoax or a case of partial healing, which was common in the ancient world. No one would know the blind man better than his parents. Verse 19. They asked them, "Is this your son? Was he born blind? If so, how can he now see?" His parents replied, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we don't know how he can see and who healed him. Ask him." His parents said this because they were afraid of the leaders of the Yudayoi, who had announced that anyone saying that Jesus was the Messiah would be expelled from the synagogue. That's why they said, "He's old enough, ask him." The persecution of the followers of Jesus had already begun. The primary way they were persecuted was to expel the followers and sympathizers of Jesus from the synagogues. A word about synagogues of Jesus' time is probably in order here. In short, synagogues were different from what they are today. A synagogue was something like a mini Jewish community center, organized not around what we would call today religious activity, such as worship and Torah study, though it included it, but rather around things like travel, hospitality, caring for the poor, other activities that supported the community. The institution of the synagogue is actually Greek. Synagoge is a Greek word that means a gathering of people together. When the Gospels speak about synagogues, they always refer to Jewish synagogues, but the idea of a synagogue was a simple gathering of people who assembled together in the Roman Empire. It is important to realize that there were synagogues which were under the religious control of the variety of Jewish religious factions. This is likely to be what was behind Matthew's usage of their, as in Matthew 4:23, synagogues, versus presumably our synagogues. Verse 24. So for the second time, they called in the man who had been blind and told him, "God should get the glory for this, because we know this man, Jesus, is a sinner." "I don't know whether he's a sinner," the man replied, "but I know this, I was blind, and now I can see." "But what did he do?" they asked. "How did he heal you?" "Look," the man exclaimed, "I told you once, didn't you listen? Why do you want to hear this again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" Then they cursed him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke through Moses, but we don't even know where this man comes from." "Why, that's very strange," the man replied. "He healed my eyes, and yet you don't know where he comes from. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he is ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. Ever since the world began, no one has been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done it." "You were born a total sinner," they answered. "Are you trying to teach us?" And they threw him out of the synagogue. They came to the healed man, telling him ahead of time what the accepted answer was to be. However, he rejects their answer by saying that he was not a trained theologian and he should not be asked about the intricacies of theology and halakha, what is lawful and what is not. He only knows that he was blind from birth and now he sees everything perfectly. They continued to question exactly how Jesus healed him. At this point, the man sarcastically asked them if perchance they also wanted to become disciples of Jesus, since they were so interested in him. The inquisitors then pronounced a curse on the man whom God had just blessed with the miracle of sight, insisting that they did not know where Jesus came from and by what authority he did what he did. The healed man's sarcasm betrayed his newfound confidence. He said to them, "That's strange that you don't know." Then he used their own argument against them. "We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he is ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. Ever since the world began, no one has been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done it." They became angry and accused the man of insubordination. Verse 35. When Jesus heard what had happened, he found the man and asked, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man answered, "Who is he, sir? I want to believe in him." "You have seen him," Jesus said, "and he is speaking to you." "Yes, Lord, I believe," the man said, and he worshiped Jesus. We must keep in mind that the blind man did not see Jesus at the time he was being healed. When the light broke through his blindness, it would have been very exciting but also very confusing. It is doubtful that the man would have even recognized Jesus if he were to see him again. Moreover, he was probably told about Jesus' spitting and mud-making by those who witnessed the miracle, since he would not himself been able to see it. Jesus asked the healed man if he believed in the Son of Man. Jewish Son of Man theology was already very much developed in Judaism. In some both canonical by later standards texts, such as Daniel 7:14, and non-canonical texts, such as the Book of Enoch, as we have seen in prior portions of this book, given the accusation of the sinfulness of Jesus, it is intriguing that the Son of Man in Jewish theological writings was instead characterized by utter righteousness. We read in Enoch 71:14 to 17, "This is the Son of Man who is born unto righteousness, and righteousness abides over him, and the righteousness of the head of days forsakes him not. And he said unto me, He proclaims unto thee peace in the name of the world to come. For from hence has proceeded peace since the creation of the world, and so shall it be unto thee forever and forever and ever." There were people who accepted this and similar traditions, and those who did not. Jesus therefore asked the man if he believed in that tradition. The man answered in the affirmative. When the man acknowledged that he was ready to accept the Son of Man and to believe in him, Jesus revealed his identity. He himself was that Son of Man of Israelite apocalyptic expectation. The man Jesus healed responded by an affirmation of faith and worship before the Logos of God who had given him light. This harkens back to John 1:9. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. The worship of Jesus by this man was a natural outcome of already formulated Jewish Logos and Son of Man theology. Verse 39, then Jesus told him, "I entered this world to render judgment, to give sight to the blind, and to show those who think they see that they are blind." Jesus revealed much more to the healed blind man. He told him the very reason he had come into the world was to judge, that in some cases he would give sight to the physically blind, and in some cases it would mean showing people that they were blind. Taking into consideration the overall thrust of John's gospel, which is that the Jerusalemite religious leadership are evil shepherds who are disqualified, blind, to lead, too concerned for their own status, and do not care for the good of all sheep of the house of Israel, these words of Jesus spell out his clear purpose. He will judge the cosmos by giving sight to the blind and showing those who think they can see that they themselves are blind. In our mind, judging someone is purely negative action, but this is not necessarily so. Righteous judgment is in essence restoring, enforcing the rightful place of all that is good, righteous, and praiseworthy in God's creation. It is affirming, strengthening, and declaring praiseworthy that which is right before God. So here Jesus is saying, not only has he come to perform signs such as giving the man born blind his sight, but he has also come to give light to those who think they see but truly walk in darkness. We will see this theme develop more and more as this gospel unfolds. Verse 40. Some Pharisees who were standing nearby heard him and asked, "Are you saying we're blind? If you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty," Jesus replied. "But you remain guilty because you claim you can see." The confrontation continues. Those Pharisees who overheard this conversation challenged Jesus about his claim that they were blind, to which Jesus responded that it would have been of benefit to them to have been blind, because then they could not be accused of anything. But in their case, they must be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, because by their own confession, they could see.